The Aces play the New York Liberty on Sunday. Game one of the semifinals starts at noon. The Aces do not have home court advantage. It's something they have enjoyed during their back-to-back title runs. Ed, how do the Aces knock off the Liberty? What has to go right for Las Vegas?
I think you hit it on the head the other day with Chelsea Gray. I think she needs to play really well. Asia Wilson's going to play well. I don't think Kelsey Plum's, like you said, shooting one of eight again. I think she's not going to score 29, but maybe she's in the 16-17 range. But I think it's all about Chelsea Gray.
The interesting part about this series, and obviously we saw it in the WNBA Finals last year, these are the two teams with the most star power, right? These are the two most loaded rosters in the WNBA. The Liberty, like, even when the Aces last year were really good, the Liberty were the one team that were like, oh, they can match up talent-wise with the Aces. This year, the Aces haven't been as good. Chelsea Gray injury can play into that as well, and the Liberty basically were just as good as they were last season. I think they won the exact same amount of games in the regular season. I think, obviously, your Chelsea Gray point, I think, is going to be important. I'm really curious to see how good their defense is in this series.
How they defend the Liberty.
They were pretty good in those two games against Seattle. It was two games. Seattle didn't have their starting center in the first game. Jewel Lloyd, I don't think, was 100% in that series. Seattle's not as good as New York, and they were beat up. One of the areas that New York has had a good advantage in this season on the Aces is in the paint. ESPN, when they were talking about this yesterday, they had a stat up there about how many points in the paint New York has scored head-to-head against the Aces, and it's like, I think it's 14 more per game than what the Aces were getting. So how do the Aces defend? Are they able to keep the Liberty from scoring in the paint? Can they keep Jonquel Jones from getting easy touches, and can they keep Brianna Stewart and Sabrina Ionescu from driving into the paint? Obviously, you're not going to stop them all the time for every game, but can you limit that to a point where you're not hemorrhaging points? I think that might be the biggest key, is how do they defend a team that has four star players they have on the floor, right? And that's not something Seattle had. Can the Aces defense actually show up against a really, really star-studded team?
Are we going to make our predictions?
Yeah, we can do that right now if you want. Okay. What do you got?
I'll take the Aces.
In?
Five.
I'll take the Liberty in four.
Okay.
I do not expect the Aces defense to be as good as we've seen in the past, and I still have a lot of questions about Chelsea Gray.
Okay.
And how effective she'll be. I think she'll have her moments, but I think over the course of an entire series, playing 30 minutes or whatever her minutes are, I don't think we're going to get enough from her to really balance out how good the Aces are. And quick side note, Jackie Young hasn't been good since the Olympics.
No.
Like, it's really weird where she just hasn't been very good.
She's kind of disappeared.
She's still good defensively. She's still their best perimeter defender and was good in that Seattle series. But just, like, the offense has not
been there.
Right. Of all the players you would have picked out to be like, all right, who's going to struggle because there's this whole Olympic? Jackie Young probably would have been the last one. Like, she's the youngest. Like, the way, I don't know. So she just has not been good. And that, they probably need at least one Jackie Young type of offensive game to win the series, I would guess.
Do you want to make a prediction?
Liberty in five.
Okay.
You know what Danny's actual prediction is? The winner of the other series wins the WNBA title.
Yes.
Lynx and Sun?
Yes.
Okay.
That's only because he has a bet on both of them to win the WNBA title.
Oh, okay. That's why.
Yeah. Might have to pull one in on the Liberty.
Next question.
Devonte Adams showed up on the Raiders injury report yesterday, so popped up yesterday after not being on it earlier in the week, listed with a hamstring injury, limited in practice. Worried about Devonte Adams?
Not worried at all. It's a regular season game. He plays in regular season games. If this was a preseason game, then I would say he's not playing. So not worried.
He didn't have an awkward movement?
No. It's probably a real hamstring injury instead of an awkward movement, but not worried at all. I think he plays.
I am a little concerned just because it's hamstring, and those can take you out for a long time if it's a genuine, like, real hamstring injury. So I'm a little curious because, I don't know, does Pierce talk again before the game? Before Sunday? He's
today.
Done. Oh, does he talk? He does
today.
Talk today.
Okay. Morning.
I'm curious what he says and how concerned his voice sounds when he brings this up. If he just dismisses it, then Adams
is
playing.
Is.
If there's a little bit of we'll see, then
right.
I think hamstrings can be quite concerning for how long a 31-year-old receiver could be out. But not great news, but I think I'd right now lean towards your side and saying he's going to be fine and playing on Sunday.
Man, you know, that's a great question.
Also, William Karlsson is still hurt. He was apparently in practice yesterday, replaced by Nick Waugh on his line. Nick Hague missed practice yesterday as well. Bruce Cassidy said that that's just because he blocked a shot in the preseason game the night before and they wanted to give him the day off. But staying healthy is working out well for the Golden Knights two preseason games into the year.
And how many practices did William Karlsson get in? Two?
The tweet that Ken from Sendman put out is that he hasn't practiced since Sunday that we know of. So we're basically on a week here. And the other thing that Ken tweeted that is an interesting point is when they were going through lines and pairs yesterday, Nick Waugh replacing William Karlsson is kind of a sign that Karlsson isn't going to come back anytime soon because Nick Waugh is like a real replacement. Like if they had to play a game today, Waugh would be the one that plays in Carlson's spot. Whereas yesterday, Nick Hague's spot, that was taken by somebody named Joe Fleming,
yeah,
who I've never heard of before. So that was a, hey, Hague's going to be back, so we're not going to ruin our other pairs. We're just going to put somebody
with no
in his spot to just go through drills. So based on that, there might be a little bit more seriousness to William Karlsson's injury, whereas Hague truly was just take the day off, dude. Like, you blocked a
you
shot,
blocked
and
a shot and you get hurt.
Your shin's black and blue, so, you know, you don't need to skid on the ice and do that again.
I'm out.
The Kansas Jayhawks don't have a signed contract to play at Arrowhead Stadium. Kansas is renovating their football stadium, so they're playing games this year. Non-conference games were at Sporting KC, the soccer team stadium. Conference games are supposed to be at the Chiefs stadium. They apparently still have not signed an actual contract with the Chiefs to use that stadium. They host TCU on Saturday.
Well, I hope they have somewhere to play.
The story at KCUR was like they're already painting the logo on the field. So like there's some sort of this memorandum of understanding that Sharon Moore had at Michigan. Maybe there's a verbal agreement like Matthew Sluka thought he had. There's some sort of understanding that they're going to play there. But KCUR, they were like asking the public records request, like, can we see the contract? They got the one for Sporting KC Stadium. They never got one for
Arrowhead.
Yeah. And then when they asked, they were like, yeah, we don't have anything signed yet. So we'll get that done. But for everybody saying you got to get things in writing, there's an entire athletic department that doesn't have a signed contract for where they're playing
a
football game
this week.
In 2 days. Like, they're playing tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Not even 2 days. So not everybody gets things in writing all the time in college football.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, again, great question.
The Las Vegas Aviators could rebrand in the future. So the team changed names from the 51s to the Aviators when they moved to Summerlin. That's because the Howard Hughes Corporation owned the land, and Howard Hughes was a pilot. But Howard Hughes Corporation apparently no longer owns that land. And Don Logan told LV Sports Biz that they could look at rebranding. I don't believe they would do anything for next year. It would be further into the future. The Aviators were the Las Vegas Gamblers for one night. That was very popular. They were also the Las Vegas Whales for one night. I am on board a rebrand for the Aviators.
Yeah, I think the Gamblers were pretty cool.
I think that would be the very easy one to go to and embrace the entire Las Vegas
More
gambling.
Merchandise to sell. Daniel get a hat.
And by the way, if you go Gamblers, there are so many things you can use as logos and cool designs.
Right.
They had the dice, I believe, on the hat, if I remember correctly. But you can go dice, you can go cards, you can go something off the slot machines. There are so many things you can embrace if you go Gamblers that design-wise would be really, really cool. So I am on board with that. I'd also be on board if they come up with something else they can come up with something else that's cool too. But I think Gamblers would be an easy one that we could see in the future.
Well, we're going to ask Don at 9 a.m.
Don Logan will be on the show later.
Next question.
The Chicago Sky fired their head coach, Teresa Witherspoon. She's the head coach for just one season in Chicago. Angel Reese put out a tweet yesterday saying she was heartbroken, how much she loved Teresa Witherspoon. All of the replies media-wise, the response from media was very shocked that Teresa Witherspoon was fired after one season in Chicago. Harsh, fair?
I mean, you'd like to think someone gets more than one season. I mean, this
normally
first time,
you would?
First time in 5 years they didn't miss, they didn't make the playoffs. So maybe ownership didn't like that, but one season?
One season seems quick.
Yeah, it seems fast.
I would say, though, Chicago had been in the playoffs 5 years in a row. Chicago had two first-round picks in this previous draft. Granted, they lost two of their top three players from the previous year, so they did have a lot of roster turnover. But this past season was also the second-worst winning percentage in Chicago Sky history. Yeah. The only year that they have been worse was their inaugural season. So if you're the Chicago Sky ownership, you're looking around saying, we don't do this. We're not this bad. Like, there's, we had two first-round picks. How are we this bad? Yeah, with the roster turned over, but we're awful. And to miss the playoffs in the WNBA, you do have to be awful.
Yes.
12 teams make it.
Playoffs.
So 1 year's quick, but I will say, I was surprised that there was so much media outcry about how could you fire Teresa Witherspoon.
After one season.
They were bad. Like, they were, again, it's 1 year. But they were bad. This isn't like, oh, they fired a coach that got the four seed. It's not like Seattle fired their coach after getting the five seed right. and losing to the Aces. They were genuinely awful this season. They were a bad basketball team. So I was a little surprised at that. And I will say, I still think their biggest issue is they use their two first-round picks on a power forward and a center that neither one can shoot. Like, they're too, like, this is our future. They've got zero spacing
right.
for as long as they're together. I think the roster construction is probably the bigger problem than the coach, but they were bad. So I'm a little confused as to why so many people were like, oh my God, how could you fire Teresa
Witherspoon? I think
Teresa
it was just Witherspoon? Because it was one season.
Probably. Also, fun fact, I don't know if either of you saw it, Angel Reese and her tweet saying like how much she loved Teresa Witherspoon. She did put in there, she said, you're the reason I came to Chicago.
Okay. It's not verbally.
Wasn't the draft the reason?
It's yes. not committing verbally and signing your national letter of intent.
Right. It was a very confusing sentence in her. She said a lot of nice things about Witherspoon, but it was like, you're the reason I came to Chicago. you got drafted.
No, you're the reason Chicago took you.
Right. I mean, I'm sure maybe there was a good relationship with Witherspoon before the draft, and that played into why
That's
they
fine.
Picked her. But if Indiana had been like, Caitlin Clark's a bum, we're going to take Angel Reese number one. Is she not reporting to camp in Indiana or something like that? I don't know. So, yeah, she got drafted there. Coming up next, we'll get back into some college football as UNLV is officially staying in the Mountain West and got a pretty sweet deal out of it.
Yeah, I definitely had that feeling. You know, obviously it was good to give the body some rest, especially going, you know, straight from fall camp into the season. But, man, I'm starving for that next opportunity. I can't wait to get back out there with my guys. And I know everyone in the locker room is ready to get back out there. Man, we're hungry. You know, it did suck watching teams play while we're not playing. But like I said, it was good to get some rest, get some extra film in, and you know, implement some more stuff into the playbook, which was good. And it's going to make us better throughout the season. But I was definitely itching to get back out there.
You're listening to the Press Box on 100.9 FM and 1100 AM.
UNLV is officially staying in the Mountain West. So is Air Force, San Jose State, Wyoming, New Mexico, and Nevada, and football only member, Hawaii. UNLV is going to get some money out of this. They're all going to get some money out of this, but UNLV and Air Force are getting more
money out
than
of
the
this.
Other five. UNLV is going to get a lump sum between $10 and $14 million, and then they're going to get an additional between $1.5 and $1.8 million every year for the next 6 years. So that's on top of what they're already getting in their media rights deal, which at the moment is, I believe, roughly $6 million
yes.
a year.
Yes.
So this is all going to be in addition to that. I would note that once the San Diego State, Colorado State, Boise State, Utah State, and Fresno State five leave before the 2026 season, that media rights deal is going to be coming down.
Yes.
They're not going to be absolutely. Getting $6 million anymore from that television
from that
deal.
Team.
It'll presumably be coming lower than that.
With
but
that team.
They are getting the lump sum, and they are getting some extra money per year for the next 6 years. Did they make the right choice? Because they basically got to sit down for 48 hours or so.
They did a lot of pondering.
Huddles. The huddle,
know,
long
huddle up.
And make a choice between do we go to the Pac-12, where they could have, in theory, had to have paid $18 million in an exit fee. We don't know how much the Pac-12 was willing to take care of that, but in theory, there was $18 million they could have had to pay, but they stayed in the Mountain West, where they're going to get somewhere between $19 and $24 million over the next.
Well,
and
for an athletic department or for a school with a athletics a $20 million deficit.
So that's all this was.
So that's
like is that
I think
that's the decision?
I think the money had most to do with it, right?
I think it seems that way.
It seems that the money had most to do with it. I said the other day they should go to the Pac-12.
So here's my question, and this is what we obviously don't know, but we'll find out in the next couple of years. What is the media rights payment in the Pac-12?
In the Pac-12 comparative to the Mountain West.
Right. Because this lump sum, $10 to $14 million, is great.
Sure.
You're getting an extra $1.5 to $1.8 for the
next six years. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
If the Mountain West media deal drops from $6 million a year to like $1 million, I don't know if this is true, and I couldn't find anything to back it up, but I saw a comment that said Conference USA teams get less than $1 million on their media rights deal. If the Mountain West drops that low, and we're talking $1 million in a media rights deal per year, and the Pac-12 actually gets their 10 to 15 that they project.
Put out there. No one knows if that's true.
The $10 million in a lump sum's nice, but that's way better. Like, that's long-term. Like, that's better. So that's the number that I'll be curious to see that'll kind of...
Now, what if it stays at six?
Phenomenal work by Gloria Navarez. Give her whatever. She probably deserves all of that six then, because I have a hard time believing they're going to keep it at six. You just lost five of your best programs, and you only have seven members.
Well, and you lost the ones... Most of the ones that people watch.
Right, exactly. You lost your biggest television draw in Boise State. In theory,
one of your biggest markets in San Diego State.
Right. Like, those two specifically hurt quite a bit. You lost whatever foothold you had in the Colorado market. I know Air Force is still there, but you lost Colorado State. So, yeah, I if it stays at six, hell of a job by Gloria Navarez. Like, that would be incredible to me. I think they're more like the Conference USA now. That would be my assumption, that they're going to drop that low, because UNLV's here, but are people that intrigued by a San Jose State-Wyoming matchup in any sport, right, really?
On a Friday night?
Right. Like, I know they're going to have to add some members, so that could change this, but what's the best television draw for a football game among the current seven members? Is it UNLV, Nevada?
UNLV.
Yes.
It could be UNLV, Nevada. I didn't think of Nevada. UNLV, Nevada?
Nobody watch, like, nationally, nobody truly watches that. Like, just thinking, if I am working for ESPN or Fox or CBS and I'm negotiating with the Mountain West, these aren't that great.
They all need inventory, but.
Right.
But the money, you make a good point on what would the money be for that inventory.
Like, in theory, you know, UNLV is 10-1 and Air Force is 9-2 and they're playing and the winner's in a conference championship game or something, and there's some hope for a group of five playoff spot. Like, there can be some intrigue when you have the best teams playing each other late in the year, but that's really it. Like, the matchup wise, you're not nationally, there's not going to be much interest in, well, New Mexico's taking on Air Force today. Right. I'd be surprised if the media rights deal stays
at $6 million.
Yeah, near six, just because I don't think it's all that intriguing of games.
Key there also is what you said in terms of, because the only thing the Pac-12 done is surmise that that's what it could be.
Right.
Could be a six.
I question if they're going to get 10 to 15 right. million, especially
they
since they just struck out. They didn't get Memphis, Tulane, USF, or UTSA, and they didn't get UNLV
or
Air Force. So this week, they invited eight teams to join their conference, and they got one of them in Utah State. So they, terrible week for the Pac-12. I'd be surprised if they get 10 to 15 million as well. I think they'll get at least six. I mean, that's the best teams of the Mountain West.
Right.
So I don't think there's any reason they wouldn't get at least what the Mountain West is currently getting, and in theory, a little bit more. There should be better. But if they do get 12... and the Mountain West gets one, you've basically just lost that lump sum in 1 year once these new media rights deals are signed. So that'll be the big number to see about money. Did they make the right decision? I think from a conference strength standpoint, they made the wrong decision.
Well, obviously, if you look at the teams.
Yeah. Like, we talked about this a little bit, but is UNLV basketball in a lot of trouble now?
I don't know. They're about to dominate a conference.
Are they?
I mean, I don't know about dominate. I should take that word back, but they certainly made a stride forward, I think. There's New Mexico.
They're the third best program Reno. In the conference.
Are you saying New Mexico and Reno?
Yes. Over the last decade, the third best program in this conference. There's no reason to think they're going to start dominating it.
No, dominate was the wrong word.
Yeah. They're better than Wyoming, San Jose State, and Air Force, but that's like being better than Danny's volleyball team.
And whoever comes in as the eighth team.
Right. But like this is a low major college basketball conference.
Yeah.
This is a one bid low major, and the only time people care is when it's March Madness and you're playing your conference tournament game in some random team's gym. I know they're going to say
Thomas and Mack.
But this is a low major college basketball conference now. Like, in theory, UNLV wins the conference more often because San Diego State's gone and Utah State's
gone. Boise's gone.
Right. Like, you win the conference more often and you can get in as an automatic qualifier. But are you a 13 seed?
That was the number I was just going right there.
Like, you're a low major conference. Like, I know New Mexico, Nevada, and UNLV are better than the top of most low major conferences, but the bottom of this conference is going to be awful. So, I think this is bad for UNLV basketball.
Staying in the Mountain West.
I think it's really bad. Now, obviously, they can, in theory, schedule some harder non-conference games and try to boost themselves to win. Right. Like, hey, we won this low major conference, but look, we had like three quad one wins in the non-conference, so we get a 10 seed instead of a 13 or whatever. But I think it's really bad. Like, I think this hurts the basketball program quite a bit because you're not in this like legitimate conference that can get multiple bids in the NCAA tournament. I mean, hell, the
Pac-12 will.
The current Mountain West the committee hates. What are they going to think about this version of the Mountain West?
The Pac-12 will be a multiple bid league.
Yeah, it should be pretty much every year. I mean, those schools could have some down years, but it should be just about every single year getting at least a couple of teams in the NCAA tournament. San Diego State's in effectively every year for two decades now, it feels like, and Utah State's somehow always in the NCAA
tournament. They always scoot in as a 10 seed.
They're always there. And then Boise's been good under Leon Rice recently. Oregon State, I think they've been bad, and Washington State's been decent. I'd have to double check that.
State was good with Kyle Smith as the coach, who's now at Stanford.
Yeah, and we'll see how good they are. Obviously, they lost their conference, but there are enough programs there that you'd be like, all right, they can get two to three in most years. But the current Mountain West, or the upcoming Mountain West, not great. Let me ask you this. How bad do you think the Pac-12 misplayed this?
I talked to someone yesterday who's a beat writer, said Pac-12 is a disaster.
Right? Like, it is, right? Like, they got their four Mountain West teams that they wanted. That was their first, goal number one, they accomplished it. They poached the four Mountain West teams. But then they struck out on 7 of 18. Like, that's awful. Like, that's really, really bad. And, like, they literally this week, their big win is they got Utah State.
Yeah, that was the big win. That's brutal.
Oh, that's not great. If I'm San Diego State today.
Given who they were going after.
Right. If I'm San Diego State today, Boise State today, I'm like, what did we do? Yeah. Like, this is probably better than where we were, but what did we do?
Yeah.
Why did we do this? We're gonna have
some of them are saying that, believe me.
Yeah, we're gonna have to add UTEP. This is gross. I don't want to be in this.
New Mexico State?
Yeah.
Texas State?
Oh God. Why does everybody keep bringing up Texas State?
Why? I was wondering that yesterday when they said both were going after Texas State. I'm like, wait a minute, there's a bidding war for Texas State?
Danny, come here. You keep telling me about Texas State.
Oh yeah, they're so much fun.
Why?
Why
is anybody interested in Texas State?
They're a really fun team to watch.
Nobody cares about that. Nobody's ever been like, oh, they play a fun style. UNLV is not getting offers to some conference because of the go-go. They're not like, oh, my God, the go-go's fun to watch. Get them in the SEC.
Yeah, but Texas State coming up from the Sun Belt, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch them.
It's not.
I don't know anything about Texas State.
Also, real quick, to go back to Oregon State, Washington State basketball, in terms of tournament appearances, they're both really bad.
Yeah.
They combined for two appearances since 2016.
Oh, so they're a little bit better than UNLV.
Yeah, one was this past year, and that was Oregon State, and Washington State went in 21.
Yeah. Texas State has been an FBS member for 13 years. They have had two winning seasons. They're halfway in between. Oh, the mic's down.
Oh, down goes
the mic
that.
Has broken.
All right,
phenomenal.
Just switch over to the other one.
Just put me on the other mic. This is just ridiculous.
God, I love it so much.
This is
just make sure that screw's tight, please. Don't pull the mic.
Let this one break too. We got four, so you can cycle through this one,
this
and we
just,
got another backup over here.
I don't know why this continues to happen.
It's great.
We secretly sabotaged before the show.
Yeah, it's good. I don't get the Texas State stuff. They haven't been a good football program. They're halfway in between San Antonio and Austin. I doubt they can actually claim either of those markets. And even if you could, those aren't like, oh my God, San Antonio and Texas.
They're
not even the two biggest markets in the state. I don't get the Texas State part. I really don't. Like at the end of the day, you have to add somebody. So adding Texas State might be fine. I think it's probably better than like going FCS level and stealing the Dakotas or something. But I don't get why it's like, oh, everybody's like, oh, Texas State, you got to have them.
Well, tune in tomorrow. Texas State plays Sam Houston. You can learn
tune
all about
them. Tune in tomorrow.
Him. You can learn about them.
Tune in tomorrow.
Tune in to what? Your show? Are you breaking down Texas State tomorrow with Jared?
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Oh,
however,
no.
You should still watch their game.
Oh, Danny.
Is it on?
I'm sure it's on somewhere.
Probably on ESPN Plus.
I was going to say.
Right?
It most likely is.
Yeah, you got to tune in somewhere. You got to tune into ESPN Plus. That's where UNLV's games are going to be in 2026, by the way. Get ready for Get ready for FUBO. What the hell was that one they played in basketball last year that I was mad at?
Flow.
Oh, God.
Flow
if the
TV.
Mountain West signs a Flow TV deal, we're done. I'm not watching it.
Oh, no, it's going to be fantastic.
I'm not watching it. We're done. Sorry, UNLV. We're not watching your games anymore. All right, coming up next, we're going to stick with some conference realignment and UNLV football.
You're on the elevator up to the press box with Graney and Bischoff.
One other mention on schools that could be added. The report from yesterday from Brett McMurphy. The Mountain West is interested in Toledo and Northern Illinois out of the MAC. I am curious about that one because we've talked about, well, who will the Mountain West and the Pac-12 go after? UTEP, New Mexico State, Texas State. Do they have to go to the FCS level to bring somebody up? Northern Illinois and Toledo wouldn't be so bad from just a pure how good are they at sports standpoint.
I mean, I think they're better than Danny's favorite team.
Texas State?
Yeah, I think they're better than that.
We'll get some action in here.
Yeah.
High scores, no defense, let's do it.
It does seem a little stupid from just like a regional standpoint that like the Mountain West is like, yeah, let's go get Toledo. Let's go to Ohio.
Let's go to Ohio and play Air Force against Toledo.
Right, like it does seem a little odd, especially when Eric Harper just got done saying on that sound that we got to worry about the travel of all of our student athletes. I know this might be football only, but yeah, we're going to add Ohio to the Mountain West. Seems a little odd, but I do think from a how good is this team? That'd be pretty good at the end of the day for the Mountain West. It'd be better than their other options.
Was that a phone call? Did someone call him?
Harper?
Yeah.
Is that allowed?
I don't know. I'm not up to date on that.
Not sure?
No, yeah.
No, it was on Fox 5.
Oh, okay. All right.
The day all of this was breaking.
Okay.
And
wondering.
Yeah, that
just
was
wondering.
The most interesting thing.
Throwing that out there.
Yeah. Does he have a phone? Nobody knows. Might not.
Oh, he has one.
But one thing I wanted to complain about. Brett McMurphy's tweet about the Mountain West being interested in Northern Illinois and Toledo. McMurphy said, this adds the central time zone to the Mountain West, potentially increasing future media rights value. No, it doesn't. This would add zero value whatsoever to the Mountain West just because they'd be in the central time zone. When people talk about time zones and media rights deals, the only one that matters is the Pacific time zone because the SEC and the Big Ten are not in the Pacific time zone.
Right.
And you can have UNLV have a football game kick off at 8 p.m. Pacific time, which is 10 and 11 on the East Coast in the Central Time Zone. You're not getting an SEC or a Big Ten school to kick off at 10 or 11.
No, that's not happening.
Right, but you can get UNLV to kick off at 8, which fills this very last television window, and it's UNLV, it's San Diego State, it's all the teams in the Pac-12 and the Mountain West. That's the only valuable television or time zone window because there's such a small amount of games that can be played at that time. If the Mountain West were to add Toledo and Northern Illinois, and then say, hey, we've got the central time zone. That's a good negotiating standpoint when we talk to ESPN or CBS or Fox. Do you think any of those programs or any of those TV stations need more central time zone games?
Need more inventory from the central time zone?
They don't. Every single one of them is going to say, okay, San Jose State is playing at Toledo, and that game kicks off perfect time for central time zone. Well, we have four SEC games, three Big Ten games, a couple of Big 12 games, and four more ACC games. Oh, by the way, the American Athletic Conference and the rest of the MAC are already in that time zone.
Right.
Nobody cares about San Jose State Toledo when there's four SEC games that kick off at the same time. So it does not add value. The Mountain West getting into the central time zone does not add value because nobody is going to choose San Jose State Toledo over any SEC matchup.
Even in Mississippi State.
Right.
South Carolina.
The worst SEC matchups are going to be significantly better than Toledo,
well,
UNLV.
Significantly more watched.
Right. So the only reason the Mountain West adding the central time zone would be good is if they added an actually like watched team. If somehow a team got kicked out of the SEC and the Mountain West scooped them up, then yeah, that'd be helpful, but that's not going to happen. So this whole central time zone thing, that doesn't help the Mountain West. I can't imagine any television network being like, "Oh my God, thank God.
Thank God they got Toledo.
We got the Mountain West in the central time zone. We've been waiting so long to put the Mountain West on in the central time zone. We're so desperate for it. We're happy this happened." So that just sounds stupid. Now, we haven't done this at all because what a week of UNLV sports. They play Fresno on Saturday. First question, who starts at quarterback?
Haj Malik Williams.
All right, just want to make sure. How does the passing game look?
I think it looks better than it has.
I think so, too.
I think it looks better than it has.
Yeah. I mean, Sluka hasn't completed 50% of his passes in a single game. Like, not just for the season, not like one bad game. Every single game, he was below 50%. Haj Malik Williams had better passing numbers at Campbell than Sluka did at Holy Cross. I don't know how those compare, like, strength of schedule-wise or anything like that, but I am going to assume Haj Malik Williams looks better as a passer than Sluka did. The big question for me is, Sluka was a better runner than Haj Malik Williams.
Absolutely.
How much better? Right? Is Haj Malik Williams, like, do we get in here and it's like, oh, he's a pocket passer, he's taking a lot of sacks, he can't escape the pocket, and he's just a statue in there, and it's just, can he deliver? That could be an issue. If he's got some scrambling ability, he doesn't have to, obviously, you know, third and 10, we call quarterback draw, and it works, like they did with Sluka. That doesn't have to happen, but can he give you something with his feet while being, you know, 15, 20% better as a passer? That might be enough to make the offense better
with
Haj Malik Williams than it was with Sluka. So that's what I'm curious to see. I think the passing game will be better. It's just about how much worse is the quarterback run game. The other thing I wanted to ask you, UNLV's defense has been good so far.
Yes.
Houston looks like they're a complete disaster.
They're a complete disaster.
They got shut out in their last game.
Utah Tech, we don't take seriously.
Right. Kansas, first half UNLV kind of got run over. Second half,
they did a lot better.
Defense was pretty good. Kansas only put up 20-something points after scoring, what, they scored 56 in the bowl game? Whatever that number was. They torched them in the bowl game. Scored about half of that. I think there's a chance Fresno State's offense is the best offense UNLV has seen this year.
Oh, I think so, too, with the quarterback.
Now, Fresno State scored 10 against Michigan. Okay.
Game was closer than that, but they scored 10. I get that.
They've put up 46, 48, and 38 in their last three games, but they've been against Sacramento State, New Mexico State, and New Mexico. Not the greatest run of opponents there. UNLV's defense is definitely going to be better than those three. So I don't know how well to gauge their offense, Fresno State's offense, because Michigan held the offense in check. The last three opponents have gotten torched, but at UNLV is somewhere in between. I don't think they're close to Michigan defensively, and I don't think they're close to these other three that are really bad.
Right.
So they're somewhere in between. So I think there's a chance this could be an important test, and hey, they look great against Fresno State's offense again, or oh, they've got a good quarterback and they just torched UNLV's defense, and it just happens that Houston's awful, Utah Tech's FCS, and Kansas's quarterback can't not turn the ball over or something like that. So we'll see. Because right now, and again, it's early, opponents matter, but Fresno State, They're second in passing yards in the conference, second in first in yards per attempt, second in completion percentage. Like, the passing offense has been very, very good throughout this season. So we'll see. But I do think this might be a real chance to see the defense against a potentially good offense. And maybe that's the reason Fresno State wins the game, or maybe it's the reason UNLV wins, is their defense actually is good.
What's the line?
I believe it's 1.5.
UNLV?
Yeah.
Wow.
Started going back up.
Made the quarterback change. It went down. And Fresno State became the favorite.
Fresno State was favored, yeah.
Fresno State was favored, and then it switched.
I think enough people realized, like,
Hodge Malik Williams.
I think, well, not enough to get it. What was it, 4?
It was 4.
It's not going back to
Yeah.
That.
They didn't, not enough to get it back to 4, but right. I do think people realized, wait a minute, this should not have changed like 6 points.
Right.
Like, that's way too big of a number to switch on Matthew Sluka, given the way he's played so far this year, and maybe a realization that, oh, Hodge Malik Williams was a somewhat highly regarded FCS transfer coming right. in. Like, this isn't a complete nobody transfer that they're going to. He should, in theory, be pretty good. But again, we haven't seen him throw a single pass at the FBS level, so who knows? They should. God, I can't believe they haven't let him throw a pass yet.
No, but he ran pretty well against Utah Tech, so we know he could do that.
Does that count?
Count in terms of what? Like, we know he can scramble.
No, I'm saying it's Utah Tech.
To.
No, I'm saying,
yeah,
like,
it counts.
Does it, though?
Yes.
Does it?
Listen, I know they put up 1,000 rushing yards, but every yard counts.
Does they? I don't think they all needed
them. They all
count.
Go in the book.
They don't think they needed them, though. They could have just said, whatever.
Hey, if you take out all those and take away all of Ricky White's touchdowns.
That's fair. I think that's perfectly. He's got 15 yards on the year, Ricky White.
Yep.
That's all he's got. All right, we've got tickets to give away to go see A Perfect Circle and Primus April 28th. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com, but we've got a pair for you right now. It's a 61st birthday celebration for Maynard James Keenan. 702-364-1100. That is the phone number. It's 2 tickets to see A Perfect Circle and Primus in April. 702-364-1100 is the phone number. Caller number 6 at 702-364-1100.
Live from the Findlay Toyota ESPN Las Vegas studios, this is The Press Box with Granny and Bischoff on ESPN Las Vegas.
Do you guys understand how bad the Minnesota Twins have collapsed?
Yeah, it's great.
They lost again to Miami last night, which means the Twins are not eliminated yet. They're 3 back of Kansas City and Detroit. All 3 teams have 3 games left. They have the tiebreakers, so they still aren't eliminated, but it means Minnesota is going to have to sweep Baltimore, and then Kansas City will either have to get swept by Atlanta, or Detroit will have to get swept by the White Sox.
So Detroit's in.
Hey, the White Sox are hot, Ed.
Now they swept the Angels.
They just swept the Angels. So Minnesota's not eliminated, but one loss or one win by both Kansas City and Detroit
eliminates them,
knocks them out. And specifically last night, the Twins lost in 13 innings to Miami. And in the bottom of the 12th inning of that game, Miami did not score in the top of the 12th, so it's tied. Minnesota just needs to push the free runner on second across, and they win the game. First batter gets intentionally walked, so it's first and second, nobody out. Ryan Jeffers at the plate. The Twins ask him to bunt. He pops it up. They double the runner off a second.
Oh, man. That's the Twins nowadays.
Yes. That is how bad it is going for the Twins, that they decide in the 12th inning, needing one run, let's bunt him to third, and it gets popped up,
right,
and the inning is over, and then they lose in the very next inning. By the way, bunting doesn't always work. Everybody always yells, bunt, bunt, please bunt.
Bunt,
we got a bunt.
Bunt.
It doesn't always work. Sometimes you screw up the bunt, you end up in a double play. Yeah. So, the Twins are a disaster and about to be eliminated from the postseason, while the Tigers are unstoppable at the moment. Tigers came back and won. They were down, I think, 3-0 and scored 4 runs in like the last 3 innings of that game to come back and beat the Rays.
I don't feel like, other than like a day in spring training, they even work on bunting.
Yeah, why would you? It's stupid.
I'm telling you, I don't think they work on it at all. There's so many bad efforts. Well, I won't say efforts, not like they're not trying, but such a lack of execution on bunting in the major leagues when I watch games. It's amazing how bad they are.
I saw a stat that the Angels have tried to squeeze a runner from third home like 12 times this year, and it's only been successful 4.
Wow.
Like, Ron Washington keeps asking his team to drop down a squeeze, and they just can't do it. Like every time it's bad for the Angels. So yeah, stop bunting, just hit home runs. It's way better that way. How's Freddie Freeman?
In a boot, smiling, has a week off, no structural damage, should be okay.
Okay. Should be back right in time for the NLDS.
Yeah, they get the bye.
See, you're always complaining about the bye, and now you need it. Freeman's hurt. You need the bye, Ed.
Need to act differently during the bye. Simulated games. Need to stay sharp.
Listen to Coach Ed Graney over here.
Need to stay sharp.
Gotta stay sharp.
Yeah, we gotta stay sharp. Don't be lazy. Don't be sleeping in on the bye week.
Does Tyler Glasnow have an elbow?
He's not pitching. He's done.
You think he's done for the season?
Yeah. I don't think he's coming back in the playoffs. Yeah, who is? Buehler pitched well last night for the first time in like 10 months.
Look at him go.
Yeah, he pitched well for the first time in 10 months. Yeah, no. Flaherty in game one.
Flaherty's a bum. Pitch him game one. Flaherty's so bad the Tigers traded him and got hot. The Tigers don't even have a second starting pitcher at the moment. It's just Tarek Skubal and then bullpen days. It's what they're going to do. It's going to be funny. But yeah, Flaherty's a bum.
Dodgers bullpen better be good because it's going to be like 4 or 5 innings and that's it.
It has been good.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It better be continued to be good because they're not going along with those guys.
Did you see Freeman's injury?
No, I was not watching.
Bad throw to first, so Luis Arraez had to come off the bag to catch it and then went back to tag him.
And he just stepped and they rolled it?
Well, so he tagged Freeman's knee, and Freeman was kind of like trying to avoid the tag while also running to first, and he like rolled his ankle on the bag and then just immediately came off the field. Like they didn't even try to stay in the game, didn't like, oh, let me see if I can run this off, just immediately. Took him like 30 minutes to limp off the field. I was like, can we get this guy off the field? Come on.